Welcome to D&D,
dinner party role-playing podcast.
I'm your host and Dungeon Master,
James Gressel,
and with me today are
two really fun
really
people.
Say hi, fun Mike and Beth.
People.
Hi.
Oh,
that's a preview of what kind of episode this is going to be. We have a tight window this week and too much story to fit into that window. So we're going to do a little bit something different. We're just kind of going to, this is going to be a little bit more of a hangout mini episode. And then we're going to get back to the story next week. So you're not going to have to wait 2 weeks for the episode. Just saying that up front, thinking about all the story that we have to get into with this kind of dungeon crawly, more getting to the end of the prequel. In the window that we have this week, we want to kind of open that can of worms just to shut it down real quick. So what we're going to do is just kind of hang out for a little bit. What happened was Mike and Beth and I have not seen each other for a few weeks, which is weird going back 4, 5 years, 6 years now. So
We are so used to seeing each other at least. But back when we lived
in the apartment, we saw
each other multiple times a week.
Yeah, almost every day.
And then now, after you guys moved, we see you at least once a week.
But it was for a bit.
For a bit.
Well for a bit, COVID, it was no. And then
for like a year, it was no. Yeah. It was nothing.
Yeah, it's one of the problems with creating things with your close friends is that when this happens and we haven't seen each other for a couple of weeks, we're just shooting the shit.
Yeah.
We
just have to record. Like, how was your week? What did you do? What games did you play? What movies? What TV? Like, just, it's because freaking James and doing his Dead Meat award show, I was not incapacitated, but I was working.
Incapacitated. Do you have like a panic attack on the floor?
I did get incapacitated once. Yes. I will not lie. But
I was getting text messages like, Beth, I can't do it. I've got too much on my plate.
I did message James and was like, hey, I don't know if I'm going to be able to finish this. This is a lot of work, blah, blah, blah. I did freak out.
However, mostly it was because we have a puppy at home and like managing the puppy and doing all of this work and having a full-time job was just a lot for one day.
Yeah, one day really got me. And then so basically my weekends, anytime I was not working on this project, I felt guilty. So we didn't record the past two weekends because of that. So it's all James' fault.
It's all James' fault. I hope.
Oh, by this time.
It will be aired. Yeah.
So check it out.
If you have not watched the Dead Meat Horror Awards, go check it out.
Partially edited by Mike Sagan and graphics by Beth Radloff. Yeah.
And we definitely gave.
We're low-key producers on that.
Yeah. James had indicated to me that that's how he saw your role. He was raving about you guys. Aww. I don't know if I'm permitted to say or not, but he was raving about your contributions to the show and just how much better you guys made the show. Aww. So I can't wait to see it. I saw the little montage that you did, Mike, and holy fuck, was it good.
Thanks.
So I can't wait to see the whole show.
It's cool. Like, it's one of those things where a montage of that caliber was 51, 52 movies.
Holy.
Horror movies that came out in 2021. I had seen two or one. Like, I have only seen a few of them. I'm not a horror guy. I don't watch horror movies. And so I'm sitting there like, I don't know how to do this. I don't know how to watch 50 movies and be able to pick portions of those to put in this montage. But luckily, James has editors on his staff that work 9 to 5, where I'm also working 9 to 5, but at my regular job. So I literally could not watch. I did not have the time. They ended up, the editors pulled selects for me. So that way I could just breeze through and see what would work. The hardest part was making a narrative to tell a story in a montage and make all of these movies kind of talk to each other. And it was very tough. The time I freaked out with James, I was like, in my head, I didn't have a story yet. I had an intro, but I didn't have the ending. And through freaking out, I was able to calm down and really figure out the narrative to piece all these movies and have them talk and be cohesive. And it turned out, I'm so happy with
it's
the way
so
it turned
cool.
out.
It's so good. I can't wait to see the whole show. It's funny how that happens. I feel like I don't know, maybe that's not the best way to work creatively, but I feel like that's definitely happened to me a bunch of times.
That's a part of the process of making something, though, because you start with like all of the potential mm-hmm. and all your ideas, and you have to convince yourself that it's going to be incredible in order to start. Yeah. And then you start and you're like, oh, what I do is hard. Halfway through is when all of the doubts come mm-hmm. and you're on the floor crying because why did I think that I could do something so incredible as watch 51 movies and put together a spot like this?
Yeah.
And then you figure it out. You keep moving through that difficult time. Something cracks, something opens up, and suddenly you have a completed piece. And once another person looks at it and they go, wow, all of the good feelings come in. It's why we do it.
It's why we do it.
It is.
That's what you just described is every single time I start a trailer mm-hmm. or a TV spot.
So every time I start a painting.
We go, creative people, we go through this.
Every time James makes a soup.
I do. I had this week I made something that I was really, really happy with. And it was so funny because like, I mean, it's a different kind of thing with food and like the story of the show. But like I made a short rib pasta sauce, and I thought that I braised the short ribs for a long time, and then I made blended up the braising liquid into a sauce and reduced it a little bit. And I thought that the braising liquid was way too mushroomy. I was like, fuck, I spent 5 hours and a bunch of money on this sauce and then it's like too mushroomy and it's not what I wanted and whatever, you know, but then sat on it, didn't finish it that day. The next day came back. Or a couple days later came back and with the pasta and some pasta water, or whatever, it all came together and it was awesome.
Oh, nice.
And it's like, that's, or like, and that happens with this show too, with the story and stuff too, where I'll like think of something or you have an idea and it's like, well, what, but then what, or you guys will change the story and get yourselves into a situation. I'm like, how am I going to, but then you have those moments of it comes together or you figure it out. You know, that's really kind of what it's about in a way, is the discovery mm-hmm. aspect of it is kind of an underrated aspect of creativity, I feel like.
Hugely.
Like we always talk about like the end result.
Yeah.
You know, like your spot was amazing. It is amazing.
Thanks. Yeah.
The end result is great.
Mm-hmm.
But
the journey.
And for you personally, as the person who made it, I'm sure that moment when you cracked it, that moment, like when I cracked a big moment for the prequel that you guys haven't been to yet, mm-hmm. I like ran and told James, like
I've done it.
You know, like you have personally for the artist, Beth, I wonder how you feel about this too, of like that moment where like it, you get it. And that is almost better than getting it done, or it's a different kind of good, I guess, you know, because eating that pasta was also very good.
I haven't talked to you about this, Gressel, but something that I have started appreciating because of this show and because of you as a chef, you are a writer, storyteller, performer, chef.
Mm.
And we have talked about, or you've come to me and talked about like, as a chef, you want to kind of have a signature,
yes,
or have a vibe.
That's something I'm working on. Yeah,
like a style, mm-hmm. for a different term. And it's been really surprising to me how directly related, let's say, illustrating or painting is to being a chef cooking. It's not just recipes, in the same way that like sitting down and painting isn't just a paint by the numbers, so mm-hmm. to speak. You are making these very active decisions that are unique to you. So the dishes that you cook and the paintings that you paint, when somebody looks at that, tries that, there's a part of you in it. And I knew that cooking was an expression and could be an artistic expression. Certainly you see like Elevated, Ugly Delicious, or Chef's Table, or Netflix shows that really do celebrate that aspect of it. But I guess I have been personally really starting to understand how exact being a chef is in equal to being an artist.
Mm.
Like they're really, sometimes you'll be like, I don't know if this relates to you and your paintings, Beth, but it does. It always does 100% of the time. And I'm really pleased by that.
It's so fun for me in these, in the last like years, a couple years, I guess. I feel like I've, part of it is like the recipe cards for the patron rewards for this show, or like, or the, or having to make food for you guys and present that food in kind of a more public way. Cause it's one thing to be a home cook and, you know, be a hobbyist and cook for, you know, myself or my family or even, or friends or, you know, but it's another thing to kind of present it publicly, and it changes it a little bit. And like early on, you know, the food on this show, if you go back and you look at season one and the dinners that we were having, it seemed very disjointed and unconnected from the story, even though, you know, it was still kind of like, you know, the idea is the food inspires the story, inspires me to tell the story. That's kind of the thing. And early on, it was more just I would think about the story while cooking. It then became, you know, in season two, it really changed to what does this dish make me think of, and how does that kind of translate into this fantasy story? But in doing like the recipe cards and stuff like that, and going back and looking at the food that I've made in the past and looking at it with hindsight, it's really made me think more about like, yeah, like what makes it a story and not a collection of recipes, you know, like, and what am I really saying with the food that I'm making? Because I'm saying something with this story. And that's always been, it's always been like, you know, having the educational background that I do of like having studied, you know, writing and storytelling and everything, like that has always been clear to me that like I am trying to say something with this story. What that is has changed over time, but that's always, obviously, that's always an aspect of it. Like we are creating the art for a purpose. We're trying to say something about ourselves or about the world or about whatever through the things that we're creating.
And that change is also harkening back to like while you're editing, while you're painting, while you're making something, the discovery of what that thing is becoming is that change.
Right. It wasn't until later that I realized that there's also that in the food.
Yeah.
And you know, it's now becoming a bigger part of like, well, how am I telling the story with the food as well as telling the story with the story, you know, and something that I've mentioned casually, I think on air and then also in just our regular conversations. And I say it in our food chat sometimes too.
And we have a group food chat where we take pictures of the things that we make and share them with all of our friends.
Sometimes I feel like I'm very obnoxious in that chat. Sometimes it'll be like days where it's just me. And I'm like, oh no, I'm pissing everybody off.
No.
You know, it's like, what is my kind of storytelling voice through food the way that I have a storytelling voice in the story? Like, I feel like I do have a storytelling voice. At this point in the show, 5 years in, I have a storytelling voice on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know,
it'd be weird if you didn't.
Yeah. I feel like, especially end of season three, season four, and this prequel especially, I feel like I've really kind of started to hit a stride of like, you know, how the show runs, the story that we're telling, whatever. How can I do that through the other thing that I like to create, the other thing that I like to express myself artistically, and that is through food. What is my voice that way? That's a thing that I'm really trying to do. And, you know, and I'm also not a professional chef where like I don't have the background and the experience to really kind of dial in that. I'm still learning, which is also really fun, you know, to kind of have this other medium to kind of play around with. It's like if you picked up clay.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, sorry. I want to go back to cracking the moment where you crack the code, essentially, of like, oh, the eureka moment.
Yeah.
Because my eureka moment was I still didn't feel good, but so after I told James that I didn't think that I could do it, I was freaking out. He said, oh, it's okay, man. I'll finish the montage if it gets to that point. And I was like, okay. And then I told myself that, okay, it's because that was a Friday. And I was like, all right, I'm going to work on it this weekend. And then come Monday, I'm done. Like, I just cannot work on it anymore. And then Saturday rolls around And I walk into Beth's office and I'm like, I'm going to keep doing this. And you specifically, you were bummed.
I was.
You were like, why? I'm not kidding. Like sure. And I started to doubt myself, but I had hit that eureka moment where I was like, I know what I want to say. I know how I want to tell this story.
And I didn't know that. Mm. I knew
the frustration.
Yeah.
But so, and the whole point is, I don't want people to think that you have to go through oh my gosh, this is so fun, I can do it, to, oh my gosh, complete despair. And then you're like, oh, hey, I did it. Cause that's like you watch that on the television, you know, but it doesn't always have to be like that. You can go from being super excited about something to in the middle, still being excited and not be sad. And then also still put out a great product, which is cool. But I'll never forget how I felt in that moment telling you I was scared of what you were going to say. Because I knew what you were going to say. And even after that, leaving your office and being like, man, she's bummed for me.
I thought he was making a mistake.
She thought I was making a mistake. And that made me think that, am I making a mistake? But I wasn't. And I ended up having that eureka moment and knocking it out of the park. Even just in my own opinion, I think, like, I'm going to put that on my website because I love that piece so much. But I did have a moment where I was like, this
isn't
going to happen.
The day afterwards, I was in the bathroom. And so Mike's office, our bedroom is lofted. So he's up above the bedroom. And then there's a bathroom attached to the bedroom. And I was in the bathroom. And all I'm doing is listening to what the trailer sounds like. Just the sound bed alone. And getting shivers.
Yeah, for sure. I believe it.
And I came out of there and I was like, what?
And that, did it.
And then, yeah, that, and
exactly. Done it.
Yeah, and that's when she came out.
I was wrong.
She was like, she yelled up. She's like, that sounds amazing. I'm not even looking at it. I was like, yes, I know. I figured it out. Like, everybody helped along the way, which is sometimes you need that help.
I will chime in and say that, yes, it is true that you don't need to have that roller coaster ride of an experience when you're making something. It's also okay if you always have that roller coaster yes, ride when you're right. making something.
Jesus.
Because that's my experience. I could just draw a little face in my sketchbook and it goes from like, I'm the best artist, I'm the worst artist. This is finished. Every time. Every fucking time.
Something I've noticed with this show is the times when I've spent more time writing things, like when I try to more closely resemble what like a pre-written campaign is, when I try to like really, really, really pre-write things to where I'm like reading some of the narration, I have more of that journey of like where when I write it, I'm like, all right, great. This is, I'm fucking George R. R. Martin right now. I am the fantasy king, and then we'll then go back and either read it or we'll be reading it on air and be like, this fucking sucks.
Oh, no.
This is the worst thing that anybody's ever put on paper.
Oh, I can see and it then in the we'll light of day and the mistake has been made.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, well, we're here now. And then we'll go back and when I'm cutting it or whatever, we'll be like, it's fine. It works. It's, you know, like. And then, you know, and then you guys will come in and make it better. And you know, it'll go from there. But like it's just such an interesting thing. These creative pursuits that we have and, you know, anybody listening, you know, this is now an Art Friends episode.
Oh, it really is.
You know,
oh, shit.
But you know, if for creative people who are listening, or you know, no matter what your creative thing is, I'm sure, you know, you probably do more creativity in your life than you even realize. But it's
a very thrilling way to live.
Or things that you don't think are creative are creative. Like I was
like
thinking.
Cooking.
Yeah, yeah, cooking. I was just thinking about like electrical work. I don't know how the fuck people do electrical work.
God, right.
But if you're an electrician, you walk into a house that is fully done and they're like, hey, we need to do this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
I would freak out and be like, I don't know how I'm going to get this done.
Where do you put the holes? Yeah. Like there's an art to
that too. Yeah. So it's like, it's 100%. Not just creative thinking is wonderful and infuriating and magical. Like it's everything, you know,
it really is.
It's
and deeply human. Yeah. I remember I went to an artist retreat back in 2019 and they were talking about like, why be creative? What is it about creative thinking that is so important to human beings? Like, why are we so fascinated by these things? What's the point that I want to make about this? There was a slide where they were talking about the Eiffel Tower is its own thing, and then cheese is its own thing. And then this one guy made the Eiffel Tower out of cheese, and it went viral. And a bunch of people were like, that's really interesting, and I love to look at it and experience it. But why? Why are we so fascinated with these kind of new ways of examining things that we know about? And like, to go back to the Eiffel Tower, architecture. That creative thinking in art itself is so integral to being human that the box that we put our stuff in looks so many different ways for so many different reasons.
There's that show Home, I believe, on Apple TV. I don't know if you guys watched it.
Tell me about it, Steph.
It's where they like each episode is centered around like some guy has, you know, 500 square foot apartment and has it completely modular.
Mm-hmm.
And or this house is made only of bamboo.
Mm-hmm.
Or this house is like, it's just the coolest thing in the world. Like the creative ways people build the boxes that we put our stuff in.
Yeah. It's not logical. It's not functional. It's art. It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
My college roommate, the best man at my wedding, whose name is Mike, he is an engineer. And in college, he built a bike out of bamboo.
Really?
Yeah. And
wheels and everything?
I think the wheels were wheels.
Okay, but you have the structure. But
the frame of it, the handles, the seat, the whole nine was bamboo. And that was very much a, why? You know? but like, and it wasn't... He wasn't trying to make a better bike. Uh-huh. He wasn't trying to make like a new invention or anything. It was just as best as I can remember, it was just to do it.
Yeah.
You know, to make something. And, you know, I think that there's sometimes in like popular consciousness or whatever in society, I don't know what I'm trying to say, there's a disconnect between like the mechanical make something with your hands and the like capital C creative or whatever, or, mm-hmm. or like capital A art. For me, there's something about the intent of like, I had this idea, I just have to see it through. And no matter what that idea is, if it's just... if it's, you know, an efficient electrical system in a house, or if it's building a bike out of bamboo or whatever, if you just want to accomplish a problem by creating something with yourself, with your mind or your hands or both or whatever, that there's something that's so cool to me about that. And the curiosity that it takes to propel yourself through those tasks, to get mm-hmm. yourself over the humps of, I don't know how to do this, mm-hmm. or this is terrible or whatever. That's something that always drives me to bring this Dungeons and Dragons podcast back to Dungeons and Dragons. Whenever I make a character that's like going to be a player character or a major character, I'm working on a new character for a campaign that a friend is going to run for fun, not for content. And I realized while I was putting together this character that all the characters that I make for me or that I love are curious. Curiosity is such an important aspect of characters that I want to embody.
Oh.
That to me is such a driving force, is that curiosity and wanting to find out more, whether it's in an intellectual way or in a creative way or whatever.
Oh, weird. So this is like something that you found out about yourself through
playing
this game.
Through playing D&D. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Through by Yeah, over the course of the years working on this show, and then this was just, I was, you know, like, this is just a random fun game. Any, probably a bunch of people listening who play D&D have gone through this before. You're making a character for a game. Mm-hmm. It is the first thing that you have to do. But by doing this, I did have this realization of, like, there is this common thread in these characters that I create, that I resonate with, and it is a curiosity. It's something. It's if you look at the document that I sent you about Nils, mm-hmm. and probably Katheria too, I guarantee you the word curiosity is in there. And you know, that's an aspect to other NPCs in D&D. It's an aspect to this new character that I'm making. It's something in a lot of the stuff that I've written for other stuff that I went back and realized, like, that is a very crucial aspect to what resonates to me in characters that I respond to, not just that I create, but just in other things too. If someone's not curious, they're uninteresting, because then what are you doing? Like if you're not seeking out something new, if you're not an adventurer, stay in the fucking tavern, you know? Like
what I love about this is it's to bring it back to food.
Yeah.
I feel like inspiration feeds creativity, which feeds curiosity, which then feeds inspiration. Like it all just feeds into itself. Cause like your buddy that made the bamboo bike, if that inspired one person,
to I was make thinking the some, exact same
be
thing.
Be like, well, he did that. I wonder if I could do that. That's curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Then also that's creativity. And that's also inspiration. So that's all three of those things.
And it's a ripple effect out to the people who know about it and know
exactly.
The fact that you brought up this bamboo bike, I don't know if he really thinks about the bamboo bike much at all, but it helped kind of
12, 13 years ago.
It seems to have helped you sort of reexamine the why of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, he'll never know the impact of that bamboo bike on you.
It made me rethink a lot of things too. He really changed the way that I felt about kind of that whole profession or that whole, at the time it was college. So the area of study, I guess.
Yeah.
But you know, like
because when you think of engineers, you think of check boxes and
yeah,
lists.
And math, right and wrong.
Yeah.
You know,
and black and white.
You know, both my roommates were engineers. And they
very safe degree to take back in when you were in college,
especially out of Michigan. Like that was the breeding ground.
If you wanted a job, you get an engineering degree.
Be an engineer. You know, I always thought of it. Yeah, like you were saying, very black and white and uninteresting and whatever. But the way that he was able to, and I consider him a very, you know, creative and curious person. The way that he was able to apply his knowledge set and his passion for the way things work to new ideas and to exploring curiosity really made me rethink what it means to be creative. What it means, because you know, like I, especially at the time, you don't have to be navel gazy to be creative. You don't have to be well-read to be intellectual. You don't have to be...
You don't have to carry that little leather-bound journal around in your back pocket.
No, right. Know? Yeah. That has 100 pages and 4 notes in it.
That's something that they told us in film school. Is like, yeah, put a little book in your pocket. Always keep it there for, you know, good ideas.
Inspiration strikes.
I did that, where I had like maybe a few pages and then the rest of the pages were like, this is what I want. This is who I high-fived yesterday. This is what I did. It's just like,
it's
what?
A picture of Darkwing Duck.
Yeah, truly, just like random shit. And I've never looked at that book and been like, oh, an idea. But, you know, you don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
It can come from anywhere. And that's why what's cool is I, you know, hopefully this podcast has inspired one person to cook. Or make something that otherwise they like were on the fence about doing, like push them to do something cool. And I think that's what's so neat about this medium, the show, inspiration, creativity, curiosity in general. It's just like, I feel like it just keeps making cool things. People make cool things because they're inspired by other cool things.
100%. My favorite messages that we get are, I started playing D&D because of your show.
That's so cool.
Like, this game has brought so much to me through the show. I mean, in the biggest way, most tangible way. Thank you, everybody, for listening and supporting the show. But just outside of that, the game of D&D has enriched my life to such a degree that at this point, I think is incalculable. It's really strange because I know that you know, so many people have their own, you know, D&D story and their own, you know, personal meaning that this has their own personal meaning to them. But mm-hmm. like, you know, it's such a special thing to tell a story collaboratively like this, to create something with people. And like, you have to, like, that's the nature of this game, is like, you have to be working together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For this to work. Like, it's not like, if we were playing, like, you know, when I'm playing Elden Ring tonight, Elden Ring will work whether I play it or not. Everyone else is going to be able to play Elden Ring because Elden Ring is done and is a contained thing that everybody can interact with individually. I know that it's online. I don't play it online. But, you know, it's a much more individual, you play the game. And the game is there, and it is what it is. But this, like, if I stop playing Elden Ring, everybody else in our Elden Ring group chat is going to continue to play Elden Ring.
We have another group chat where it's only the people who play Elden Ring.
But if one of you didn't want to play D&D anymore, it would be fundamentally different. You know, it's like, it definitely changed when Joel left. It definitely is different with James and Chelsea not on it right now. Mm-hmm. And if either of you were to stop doing it, it would be I don't know how it would go on, you know? So I love the collaborative nature of it. And I love that, like, you have to work together and, like, it makes you think about different things. Like, I had that curiosity realization because of D&D. Like, it's just such a special thing that, like, I can't really articulate. And it's just cool to me that people are going to get to experience that in their own lives because of listening to our show. That's bananas to me.
Yeah.
And they're going to find their own journey, and they're going to make their own characters, and they're going to be like, wait, all of my characters have this thing in common or whatever. That they're going to have that realization about themselves,
mm-hmm.
and or about their friends, or about, you know, whoever, whatever, through this thing. It's cool.
Mike and I were just talking about that yesterday, like making room in our lives to take a step back and genuinely appreciate the positive impacts that you have had on people you will never know, the strangers in the world who enjoy the things that you make. Because I know for me, a pillar made out of toothpicks of my presence in the world is that, like, I want to do something incredibly important and remarkable. I want to change the world, right?
Mm.
Whatever the fuck that means. And it's an unachievable goal that I will never achieve, but accepting that is, like, crippling. And so instead I just work towards it and let it prevent me from doing cool stuff at the same time, 24/7. And my work, just for me personally, is trying to dismantle that and be okay with, like, being a small person who has a small ripple effect, but then appreciating that ripple effect and appreciating that then causes other ripples. And, like, you can have a beautiful effect in the world without being famous or whatever that means, fulfilling your potential, quote unquote. And it's exactly what you're talking about.
Well, it's so weird too, because like I agree. I feel the same way. I'm like, I want to do something that has an impact, that, you know, I want to create something that, you know, is meaningful, that lasts or whatever, you know, the things, the reasons.
But it's something, humans, right. it's not real. It's not a plan. There's nothing you can actively do to get to that, achieve that goal.
Right.
You know?
And like, it's so hard too. Like what Mike was talking about with, like, inspiration and stuff. It's like, we are all inspired by things.
Yeah.
Like there are all different things in our lives that have led us to be the creatives that we are, that have impacted us in these profound ways. D&D is one for me. You know, other pieces of art that have fundamentally changed our core being, you know, that have altered our DNA with their mere existence. And those things have impacted us to such a degree.
Princess Mononoke.
but for example, so like that's a good example, or like that is this pillar of art.
Yeah.
This incredible work of you know, unimaginable magnitude to you personally, yeah, and to many people. And how could we ever dream to create something that would have that kind of impact?
Yeah.
But something like, but we have had impact through the things that we've made. And that's the thing that you like.
It's not the same thing.
You can't, because it's not you. You're not experiencing that impact.
Yeah. You know, whenever I fucking cook something and I taste it and I'm like, I can taste all the individual flavors because I know exactly what I put in here and there's nothing special or cool about it. And then I put it in front of Mike and he's like, this is a $45 dish that I could order at a high-end restaurant. Wow. How did you do this? Incredible. And I'm like, it just tastes like paper.
It's my favorite thing to do. Whenever she puts something in front of me, I'm like, okay, this is at a breakfast restaurant. This is like probably $17. This is pretty good.
It's very complimentary. It's
sometimes I always try to put a price tag on whatever she puts in front of me.
What I do, I wonder if you do this, Beth. What I do to Erica is I'll run up here and I'll give her a spoon. And then, you know, I'll be like, tell me how this is bad. like I already know this sucks. Confirm it. instead of just being like, you know, is this right
or whatever? Taste?
And it's funny, like we've been watching a bunch of Top Chef lately, which I love.
I know, if I crack that can open, I'll be drinking it all summer.
Oh yeah, it goes fast. I love watching any food docuseries or whatever TV show with, like, you know, you have these amazing, talented, incredible high-end chefs and stuff. They'll taste something like on Top Chef. Eventually they get to a point where contestants who have been voted out will work for the finalists to present their like final meal. So you'll have and everybody is amazingly talented. Like, it's funny because people be voted out first in Top Chef and you're like, well, you know, oh, they couldn't hack it. They're amazing.
the caliber to be on that
right,
show.
Yeah, it's just outrageous. They'll get to the end and these incredible people who like came just short, like, you know, these such incredibly talented people who maybe had like one bad day or whatever. They didn't make it to the finals. They will cook something. They'll give it to the finalist to taste. The finalist, who is like executing their like vision for their best meal to win a ton of money and fame and, you know, success and all the things that come with winning a show like that, will be like, good, and move on. You know? And like, if I make something that I really do think is good, if that, like, you know, if I were to make something that I would be comfortable like presenting to other people, to like judges or whatever, I'd be like, oh my God. Like, when you taste something and it's really, really good, it's amazing. It's an incredible experience to like
Ratatouille mouth.
Right. Yeah. But then they're just like, great, spoon in the sink, move on to the next thing. And I just think it's so funny to me to have that kind of reaction to like creating something that is obviously going to like knock people off their, you know, out of their socks. But that's just, you know, it's funny too with something like that. Like, I think about this with chefs or cooking. And one of the reasons why I'm so in awe of them as creatives is they have to do it every fucking day.
Yeah.
That's how you get good.
Bake Off. I'm like, God, I would crack in the first challenge. And they do this, if they get to the end, they do it, what, 10 episodes or whatever? Oh my, three bakes.
That's so much bread.
It's just so much. And I commend anybody on those kind of shows.
But there's science behind getting good at anything. The famous study is this photography class where you've got this teacher who split the photography class down the middle, where half the students, their job was to take one incredible photo. Like the entire semester, all you need to do is take the best photo you have ever taken in your entire life. And then the other class, what they were supposed to do is take as many photos as possible. Like the person who takes the most photos who is the winner of the class. And so the semester goes on, everybody does their work. And at the end of the semester, you look at all of like the final presentation. Here's your Top Chef moment. And 100% of the time, the best photos are taken by the people who took the most photos. Mm-hmm. It is about doing it, practice, getting to a place where the food that you are making that is going to change the world just tastes good to you.
Mm-hmm. But that's the frustration, right, though?
Yeah,
is that
you
like
can't
you
appreciate.
Don't want to. Like, you want to make Princess Mononoke. You don't uh-huh. want to do like your doodles in the margins. Like, you want to, yeah. you know, like mm-hmm. That's what's so frustrating, especially like what is that? The Ira Glass quote about like taste. Have you guys heard? I think it's him.
Is it the dip?
I'm misremembering, and I might not be attributing it to the right person, but there's something about like you don't even like when you just start out, you have taste or whatever, and like it's your taste that will guide you to where eventually, if you keep working hard, you'll be able to, you know, make something that will match up to your taste. I don't remember exactly what it is, but it's something about like you have to put in the time to get to the level of the stuff that you like.
Yeah, and it will be mm-hmm. very frustrating because, yeah, what you're talking about is the dip, where on a graph, your appreciation of what's good, the more you do something, the better you will understand what the best version of that is. Mm-hmm. And that will straight go up. But your ability without work might not go up. Mm. And so suddenly you will understand, as you understand the medium better, you'll understand how sort of bad you are at it until you get good at it from the practice of the bad stuff. Mm-hmm. Everybody's like, I have, I can't draw right now because I have art blocks. Like, no, you don't have art block. You just are drawing bad things, and that's good. Mm-hmm. Draw bad
you
stuff.
Keep doing it.
Make bad things. And that's how you make good things.
Yeah, being what, I'm 33 now, I'm scared of failure.
It sucks.
I don't want to.
You would think that you'd learn this,
yeah.
but you don't.
No, but like thinking
it never gets better.
It never gets better.
Thinking back to like me in college, I was just doing a bunch of stuff. I was doing whatever I could. And now it's to the point where I'm like, okay, I'm good. And if I make a bad thing.
But our taste is so much higher now.
Yeah. And so even stuff that I've finished that has won awards and stuff, I look back and I'm like, I could have done that differently. I should have done this a little bit. Like, why is this sound effect so like
yeah.
stuff like that? So I'm always critiquing my stuff. But no matter what, just do it.
Mm-hmm. And then the other side of that is like, share it, open it up for other people to appreciate and enjoy, because you can't know yourself without the help of others. Mm-hmm. And you can't know the impact that you're making or the even though your taste is high and you know how good you are sort of on your own value scale, other people are there to enjoy the thing that you made. So do that, share that, and mm-hmm. let them decide that you're Princess Mononoke.
Yeah. It's funny. I'm reminded of another conversation with my friend Mike about like what you were saying about how you get older. We're older now. We're so afraid of failure. But like when I was in college, I thought I was such hot shit, and like it made me think of this conversation I had with Mike in college about riding a bike. It's also bike related.
Mike's a big bike guy.
I guess so. You know, we moved to Ann Arbor, and you know, we were moving into the house that we lived in. We were putting the bikes or whatever. I didn't have a helmet. I didn't have a bike helmet. You know, because it was stupid. But, you know, like growing up, I didn't wear a helmet riding my bike around the neighborhood.
Snowboarding,
dude, one of my first,
no.
The only time I remember being a bully, there was a kid I didn't like. He was mean to me, so I'm justified. anyway, he had a helmet on and yeah. he was riding his bike and I was like, loser.
Exactly.
And wow. he looked at me and he was like, I'm sorry that I don't want to crack my head open when I get hit. And I had I could say nothing back. He was right.
That's exactly what Mike said. It was the same, yeah. was the same thing. I was like, oh man, like I don't have a helmet. What are you doing? He was like, well, because, you know, he was like, he said, my brain is worth more now.
Wow.
And like, I thought that was such a clever way of like expressing that change in how you think about your own self-preservation.
Wow.
Yeah. And like, it's funny because applying that creatively, it's like, that's so much what happened to me after college was like, I was like, myself, my sense of self is worth more to me now. So I'm going to wear a helmet and protect myself from falling on my face.
Yeah.
When I put, you know, if I were to present my creative works, but I feel like what I'm about to say is probably wear a helmet if you ride a bike. But,
or snowboarding or anything.
Or anything. Always wear a helmet.
Always wear
protect
a helmet.
Your head.
Right now, all three of us have helmets on.
Yes. In a way. But don't wear a creative helmet. Like be more, be less afraid and less protective of your own, like be more willing to put yourself out there creatively. Like something, because like, you know, after graduating, I took all of my creative works from college and just hid them away from everybody. It's like all the stuff that I worked on in college, all the scripts that I wrote, all the short stories, whatever, everything that I wrote in college, I just like, it just sat on a hard drive. And I never did anything with it. And what I have said to every, like, you know, new graduate student or whatever who comes to LA, who I get connected with to meet with, it's like, do not let stuff sit on a hard drive. Like it doesn't, it is the same end result happens if you send it to somebody and they don't like it, as if it, you never send it to somebody. Mm. It's the same thing. But if you send it to somebody and they like it, that can never happen if you don't put it out there. Like that's one of the things that I love about this show is that like, I have to put out my story every, you know, like it has to come out and people are listening to it and it doesn't matter.
And while season one, maybe the food was disjointed and didn't really relate to the intention of the show, but as time went on, because you had to make the thing, we're here.
You got, like everybody got to like, if like people who are finding the show now, people who like tweet and be like, I caught up on the whole show in the last 6 weeks or whatever. We're like,
but like, we were babies.
Like you get to hear us get better at the show in real time. It's bananas. Like
you get to hear me learn how to play D&D.
I've been re-listening to it to get ready for season five and it's so frustrating to be like, no, that's not. And me as it, for me personally, it's me as an improviser.
It's
like with you guys, like especially like I feel like at that time when we started in 2017,
we were like hot on improv.
It was like big improv. It was like I think the wave had crested, it seems, but maybe I'm just not as plugged into it anymore. But there was like a time where when improv was like the thing and, you know, everybody was into, all of our friends were into it. Everybody had taken classes except for me. And I was flying by the seat of my pants a little bit and not as comfortable and not as willing to go along with stuff. And then, you know, it was really learning as we go to how to do it in a way, you know, and
that's
and,
what D&D like, as a dungeon master, you have
improvise. To think on your feet. You have to improvise. Yeah.
And like, hell yeah, dude. Cause you learned I don't think when we started, I ever had a moment where I was like, Gressel's really saying no to me a lot, you know, but I see what you mean. And I appreciate how you pivoted.
Yeah, especially because a show, there's no like, hey, let's redo that. Let's do it this way instead. And then we cut that. That has never happened. So it's just all.
It's never happened without losing the file.
Oh, true.
Yeah, we've lost twice and we've had to redo stuff. But we haven't redone stuff for creative reasons.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And that's impressive.
That is. I'm kind of surprised by that.
I would have loved to. A few times I would have loved to. But one of the reasons why, I think part of the reason why, is like, you know, the story moves too fast. Mm. Like we can't go back and change things because like the characters have already lived those moments.
Yeah.
You know, and you guys have done such a good job of making these characters really grow. Like
I miss Margarine.
We'll get back to Margarine. I'm excited to get back to all the main characters.
Yeah.
We can talk about that. There has been no structure to this so far, but now I will kind of have a little bit of structure and just be like, what are you guys pumped to get back to it? We're not far away now.
I am. I'm scared though, because it's been a long time since I've played Margarine, mm-hmm. and I'm playing a different campaign right now on Twitch with a character who is definitely not Margarine, but similarly to you, who chooses characters who are motivated by curiosity, I choose very gutsy characters. Mm-hmm. Everything that I play is headstrong, guts, go for it, forward momentum type folks. And so I'm nervous that I will, she will be a little lobotomized for the next season.
I'm nervous for Fletch too, especially because I've been playing Nils, which he's so carefree and so fun and goofy. I know that Fletch was like kind of getting there to be like fun and kind of silly, but it's a different kind of silly. Mm-hmm. And I'm nervous. I'm scared that I'm going to like slip into Nils and go a little wacky.
I think it'll be okay though, because I anticipate that we're going to have some sort of a time jump from the end of season 4.
Yeah, it's not going to be right after for sure. Yeah. I don't, that's not going to be a spoiler. There will be, yeah.
And that was a very transformative event that happened at the end of season 4. So yeah. It makes sense for all of our characters to have changed.
Mm-hmm.
I think Fletch is going to be a little bit bitter and not himself because he doesn't have his Stormtail bow.
Yeah. A limb has been severed.
Yes. I think he'll be a little bit on edge, a little bit.
Shit got real angry at the end of the season. The end of season 4 was fucking intense.
It was really cool. What was so cool about that, about the end of season 4, and most of the show is being in it. I can see it as a movie I see it as an animated show.
I do
so
too.
I'm seeing everything in animation style, which is really cool, and it's been really fun.
I do too. I picture the show in my head when I imagine it. It's always a cartoon. It's always animated. I feel like that's kind of the best medium for it, because it lets you kind of do whatever you want. You know, like you can be more, animated about it, for lack of a better word. I just think so. I think about the moment when Margarine gives Morgan the tear, and it kills her. Like, that is just such a, like, in this, like, crazy space of, like, in between existences and, like, you know, it's just this, like, that moment to me of that action is more than any kind of, like, monologue that you could have given to her would have done.
Yeah.
You know? And I loved it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That was a long way of saying I just really love that moment.
Thanks. It's really cool. But it's the most fun I've ever had playing D&D.
It's cool because, things don't have to be said. You just understand it.
Yeah. And
that moment was really cool because you didn't have to give a minute-long speech about right and wrong and why she's wrong and you're right. And it just.
But also, like, the dark fulfillment of this need that she has. Like, to give her that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, also a kindness that results in a very gruesome death.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys can hear, but the puppy is stirring.
Oh, he is
stirring.
Wiggling.
He's been napping this entire time.
But yeah, I am excited to get back to the main story. I'm excited to get back to Flack and Zabas too. Eric and I were watching something the other day, and something came up that is like an end game thing for Zabas, and I like paused what we were watching. I was like, let me tell you how this relates to Zabas.
Dang.
And I was like, this is what I'm gonna do, and I've had this planned for so long for Chelsea, and like,
what?
And I know it's gonna, like, oh, it's just this thing that, like, I know is going to piss her off so much. And, like, in, like, the best way.
Sure, yeah.
You know, that's going to, like, motivate the character and everything. And cool. I can't wait to introduce some forward
momentum driving conflict.
Mm-hmm. Because there was, you know, like, Flack had such a big journey last season, too. You know, it'll be... Tuck!
Tucky! Do you have to pee?
Yeah.
Well, we're about an hour of this, whatever this was, anyway.
This is a hangout.
This was a hangout. The food that would have been for today that did inspire this section this session was drinks and cake and ice cream.
Oh hell yeah!
What the heck?
Well, we can't have that for during the day.
Yeah, right. that was the issue because
we're adults.
Interesting.
Write the rules.
Shared meals is drinks are shared.
Yeah.
And
it's gonna be root beer floats.
they were kind of separate. Okay. But then I was thinking about cake and ice cream because we've got some birthdays around this weekend, and it made me think of this specific thing that I won't get into now, but we can talk about after the fact once we play it.
Cool.
Which will be next week. If you stuck with us through this hangout, then we will get back to a regular stories episode next week.
I think this was cool though, because it's hopefully this episode inspiring
fun.
And like, yeah, just talking about the creative process and
sometimes
the hills and valleys that you have as a creative person, or just in general, even if you're, even if you don't think what you're doing is creative.
Yeah.
You have to have creative thinking to figure out problems that arise in your, this was just cool. It was a really cool, I had a great time.
Yeah. And I, something that's unique about our show, a lot of Let's Plays, TTRPG podcasts, they get right into the story. The content of the show is very much the game.
Mm-hmm.
Something that D&D has always sort of done is lets us be people and friends with each other on the show.
Yeah.
Where we have banter in the beginning of every episode that's kind of tied into the recap and things. Like even though we're playing characters, we are also very much presences and characters on D&D. Me, Beth, him, Mike, you, James, or Gressel. And so, I don't know, it is kind of nice to have a little sit-down conversation episode.
Well, that's always been important to me from the beginning of the genesis of the idea of the show, because that's been my experience with D&D, is that like...
It's the dinner party part of it.
It is. It's the mm-hmm. dinner party part of it. Like we are gathering together to tell this story, and that is as much part of telling the story as the story itself, is the gathering aspect. And you know, we as storytellers, you know... There is something alchemical about the equation of bringing us together to do this, you know, and without that coming together, there is no story. So, you know, this is an important part of it. And I think that, you know, I always wanted to make sure that was part of the DNA of this show was that, you know, the table, you mm-hmm. know, the table yeah. is such an important part of that, that it's the first tea. We'll get back to it next week with more story. We left you guys off inside of at the beginning of a dungeon of sorts, yeah. I guess.
Castle dungeon.
You fell down some stairs and you found a skeleton. Skeletal That's hand right. was Majumbo tumbled down.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was gonna be gross too. It was gonna be a good one. And it was even I wrote it even before playing Elden Ring.
So. Oh,
yeah. yeah, there's some spooky
to
shit
getting
in that
Scarlet
game.
Rot.
Oh my god. So we'll be back next week to pick you guys up fighting whatever kind of spooky thing you have discovered down there. Anything else you guys want to say before we wrap up? You gotta take the dog out.
I do, yeah. yeah.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thanks for listening.
I hope you enjoyed this.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed Tuck's two barks. Too.
Cool. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Do what's fun.
Do what's fun.
D D&D is a Moorpark Media podcast and a Spotify preferred partner. Written and edited by me, James Gressel. D&D is performed by James A. Janisse, Chelsea Rebecca, Beth Bradloff, and Mike Seigen.